Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm back with Eric Francis of Sportsnet. I think this is the third time you've graced this podcast, so I really appreciate you taking the time and doing this. And it was an eventful year in Flamesland. Just maybe when you take a step back and look at the season, how wild was it? How crazy was it? Was it fun to be covering this team as a writer when there's so much intrigue and trades and drama?
Well, thanks for having me, Alex. Always, anytime, my man. You know what? As a columnist, this season was the gift that kept on giving. Like, it was in the 30 years or so I've covered this team, like, it was probably the most fruitful of all the seasons. You know, there was a little bit of controversy. There was a lot of speculation. Obviously, trades were on the horizon all season long. There was going to be a reshaping of the organization. A lot of things happened, as expected, but intrigue was high. And I actually think that by ripping the Band-Aid off and trading away five of your core players, I think it's something that a lot of people in this city have wanted for a long time. And I do think there's a general belief in this city that even though they may not make the playoffs this year or the next year, that they're finally retooling in a way to move into a better direction. And they've still got some issues to deal with and all that, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of positivity in this market, even though they missed the playoffs miserably.
Do you think, like, I know the Flames have always been in that mushy middle for so long that you've covered this team. Why do you think this year was finally the year where they, as you said, ripped off the Band-Aid and did it? Was it as simple as just guys, becoming reaching UFA all at once? Was there a bit more there? What do you think changed finally? Is it Craig Conroy just coming into the job, the role?
Yeah, they went into this. It's a combination of both, but the impetus was easily laid out for Craig Conroy to make these sweeping changes because they had seven guys going into the season, seven core players, I might add, that were pending UFAs. So decisions had to be made. The lessons need to be learned from the Johnny Gaudreau situation, that you just can't let guys walk into free agency without cashing in. So, of the seven, core free agents, five of them were traded, two stayed. Michael Backlund, I think realized that if he stayed, he could have a real legacy here and be a captain. And so he signed. And I don't think he regrets it. He was a hell of a good, he was a great captain. And then the other one was Oliver Shillington, who we expect will re-sign with the team in the offseason at some point soon. So the other ones, Tyler Toffoli, he wanted out. He made it clear that if he couldn't get an extension signed, he wanted out right away. So they traded him last summer. The other was Zadorov. He went very public with a trade request. So they got him out 3 weeks later. And then the three core guys, Lindholm, Tanev, and Hanifin, they cashed in quite well, I think, on all three of them. And, you'd like to have kept one, two, if not all three of them, but contractually, that wasn't going to happen. And I think it's for the best for the organization long term.
How much credit do you give Craig Conroy for just managing that? This season, those trades that it seems as though, they've done pretty well for themselves. How much of a credit does he deserve in your mind?
I think he deserves a lot of credit for being patient. I think that was the key word that I would use. A lot of times when a lot of people may have panicked or tried to rush things. Like in particular, when Zadorov asked for a trade, well, that just added a whole new set of controversy around this team that they did not need at that time. At that time, it was early in the season. They still were hoping to make the playoffs and thought that maybe they could be a playoff team and hope to sign some of these UFAs. But when that happened, it was just a gong show around the team. So what I liked about it was you can't just have guys say, I want out, and then you trade them the next day. Otherwise, the lineup to your door will be endless. Everyone will just ask for a trade, knowing that they'll get out. So I like that the way that he made Zadorov stew for 3 or 4 weeks before he traded him to find the right deal, and also to just remind Zadorov and everybody else, we will do things on our time, not your time. So I thought that was a good example of how patient he was all season long. So no, I think he did a good job. I think he was a good spokesman for the club. I don't think he said anything that he regrets. And I don't think he did anything that he regrets.
And in moving forward with this team, obviously they have much more cap space now that they've traded away so many guys, and obviously now they have a bunch of assets, first round picks, high picks as well. What do you think they do this offseason? Is it to maybe stay where they are and try to really do a rebuild? Are they going to try to force maybe a retool on the fly? What do you think Conroy will do this offseason?
Well, the buzzword is retool. It's not a rebuild, but it sure is looking a little more like a rebuild than a retool. The only difference being that you've got a handful of veterans that are still here that I think are important to reshaping the future core of this team. And I really do believe that retool is the way to go for this organization. Their model franchise are the Dallas Stars. They think that their goal is to be like the next Dallas Stars, not. I mean, the Stars are a favorite to win the cup this year by a lot of people. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that they've got this incredible blend of old and young, and they're working together to be a really good, team. So the Calgary Flames have those core veterans. They're here for a while, and they're hoping that that combined with the youngsters, they can teach the youngsters, bring them along, create a culture, and win on the fly in the next couple of years. So people in this city all have an opinion on whether that makes sense at all. But at the end of the day, the one thing that everybody in this city can agree to is the fact that you're not doing anything with Jonathan Huberdeau. So you can call it a rebuild all you want, but you're still going to pay a guy $10.5 million for the next 7 years, and that's not going to change. So that's obviously a bit of an albatross. So the debate is, kind of going back to your question, is, the debate is, do you do anything to try and help Jonathan Huberdeau, or do you just build around him, and not around him, but despite his contract? And Craig Conroy said at these exit meetings this year to us that he wants to go out and try and find someone who can have chemistry with Jonathan Huberdeau. I think that's a terrible idea. I think that's throwing good money at bad money. And I think spending money on the open market for a veteran on the free agent market is not the right way to go. I could be wrong, but the argument is solid, I guess, that you're going to help your most expensive asset be better, which of course could help your team be better. I say you're taking a hell of a chance by bringing in someone from the outside, overpaying for them on the free agent market, and instead of saving that money and weaponizing it as cap space moving forward. Because as we see, especially near the trade deadline, teams are dying for cap space, and it's such a huge weapon. If the Flames wanted to try and use it in the during the season, I think it'd be a great idea.
With that, you talk about adding in the free agent market, and the Flames have actually got some big name free agents in the past. Some have been great, some have been, big misses. Maybe going back on that addition, they do have a lot of picks. Do you think that's a route that Conroy maybe uses, a second or a first and a second, to go get a, maybe a younger, more prime type star or really good player to help Huberdeau?
Yeah, you know what? I think you're going where Craig Conroy wants to go. He keeps talking about, listen, we all know draft picks, especially second, third, fourth, fifth rounders. What's that, a 3 or 4 year waiting period at the very least? Conroy would like to trade for several more players that are age 21, 22, who've kind of done some time in the minors and are already trending in the right direction, and they can help, turn this team around a lot faster than most expect they can. So he would like to trade for some 21, 22-year-olds. Yeah, maybe you're talking more about some 23, 24-year-olds. One of the names that keeps coming up, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Calgary Flames sign him, is Anthony Duclair. I don't think that's going to, you don't have to break the bank to get
No.
Anthony Duclair. He's bounced around the league. A lot of, there's been times where he's kind of not begging for a job, but he's been unsigned going into the season. So he played on Huberdeau's line 2 years ago when he got 115 points. So him and Sam Bennett and Huberdeau, which is an unlikely trio to spark such incredible prolific offense, but it worked. So I do think that Anthony Duclair will probably be a Calgary Flame at some point in this offseason, and will be brought in just expressly to try and, resurrect Jonathan Huberdeau's game.
Is that something, you maybe going back a little bit to the weaponizing the cap space and using that as a, they obviously traded away Sean Monahan, which was not in a, when the Habs weaponized cap space. Do you think that's something that the Flames will still, spend money to close the cap, but in the sense of trying to weaponize and help the team down the line rather than going all in to be, decent but not great right now.
Yeah, my guess is it'll be a blend. They'll leave a little bit of cap space. And the other thing, Alex, like when you leave cap space, it also means that you're forcing those people in your organization to step up. It means, Craig Conroy did that this year. He said, we are going to leave spots open for youngsters. And look what happened. Martin Pospisil is the most popular player on the Calgary Flames right now, the most exciting player on the Calgary Flames. He's a unicorn in a lot of ways. He hits everything that moves. He's a disturber, got great speed. Nobody in the organization or outside would have thought this guy would be an NHLer, maybe ever, let alone this year. So that is a product of leaving a spot open for a youngster who earned it. Same with Connor Zary. This is a guy who stepped in, and I think, on my ballot, he was fifth in the Calder voting. So I think they should go into the season saying, look, we're going to leave a spot or two open for more youngsters. We've got a lot of youngsters in the organization. Go ahead and see who earns the job. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, or if it's a work in progress, or you audition a bunch of guys, that's okay because you're learning what you have in your organization as you move forward. And it also means that you're not spending all that money. You leave some cap space, which can be huge at the trade deadline.
With that, you talk about youngsters. Dustin Wolf has been, pretty good. He's been amazing in the AHL, maybe hit or miss at the NHL level. Jacob Markstrom, was maybe not so subtle about maybe wanting to be somewhere else. What do you think happens there this off season with the goaltending position in Calgary?
It's the number one story. I'm sure we'll get into it. The number one story for the next month and a half is going to be the draft and a certain player that I think the Calgary Flames are going to be inextricably linked to. But I'm sure we'll get to that in a second. But the other biggest story of the season is going to be, what do you do with Jacob Markstrom? Does he want out? He was very vague with his comments at the end of the season. Actually, I don't think he was vague at all. I think he made it pretty clear that he's frustrated. He wants out. He wants to go win somewhere else. His frustrated comments that he kind of had during the season pointed to that as well. That whole situation has been unfortunate for the organization and has to be dealt with. So I would assume that I think he'll be traded this offseason. My theory has always been that there are going to be a number of teams in the playoffs this year that have, cup aspirations, but lose in the first or second round, i.e. Toronto. That just realized, you know what, we need a goalie. You can't win anything in the National Hockey League without a goalie. And so, Toronto Maple Leafs would be a team that I think would be very interested in Jacob Markstrom. I mean, Brad Treliving was the one who signed Jacob Markstrom. That's an obvious link that people have already made and will continue to make. But I think there'll be other teams too that are looking for a goaltender who need one. So, but that said, he's got 2 years left on his deal. Calgary Flames, no, they don't. They can be patient again. Craig Conroy can be patient, wait on this, and trade him only when the deal looks perfect for the Calgary Flames. And until it does, they don't need to make the trade. Now, I think that also the impetus is they want to get Markstrom out of town means that they can start Dustin Wolf and see what they really have here. He won his last four starts of the season, and he played quite well, but those were nothing games. They were meaningless games. But he played well. I shouldn't take it. I'm not taking anything away from him. But if you ask me how he was this year as an NHLer, I would say average at best. But I'm not, that's not even a criticism. The guy, he's just a 21, 22-year-old kid who's getting his first taste of regular NHL hockey. So that'll be a fascinating story all summer long. Because the other thing is the third stringer, Dan Vladar, just had hip surgery and is only going to be ready, mere weeks before camp breaks. So he's not tradable, especially at a $2.2 million cap hit. So Ladar's here. The only question is who else is with him.
Do you expect them to maybe add another depth goaltender if they do trade Markstrom?
If they trade Markstrom, yeah, they're going to have to go out and get another goaltender either via the draft or whatever. But I also have to say that they did pick up a hotshot goalie from the Swedish second league recently, and I'm not suggesting he's an NHLer, but they want to start him in the AHL next year. He had some pretty impressive numbers, and they recently signed him, and there were several teams sniffing around him. So who knows? That's how they found Dan Vladar. Well, the Boston Bruins found Dan Vladar. But the goaltending in this organization, they've got a really solid group of people who oversee that. And I wouldn't be surprised if this kid from Sweden is the real deal and could eventually be an NHLer.
Another kid that might be the real deal is Tyja Ginla. Obviously, you've written about it at length, and I think it makes so much sense, you know, in Flames world to talk about, you know, Jerome McKinley's kid maybe being drafted by the Flames, and Jerome, plays, obviously works for the Flames as well. Just maybe talk about that decision the Flames might have with, you know, Ginla moving up the board, maybe not even being available at nine. What do you make of that decision for the Flames as to what they'll have to do if he's there at nine and maybe even moving up?
Well, I think first of all, Tyja Ginla was a guy who started the season as maybe a second or third round. That's where he was ranked by all the experts. I don't pretend to be a prospect expert, but I've spoken to a million of them lately because I'm fascinated with this story and Tyja Ginla in particular. And, you know, he's Jerome's son. Jerome's a Hall of Famer. You know, him and Lanny McDonald, the two most popular and best players of all time for this organization. Jerome's an advisor right now. I'd imagine that role is going to be stepped up. I think he'd probably be an assistant GM, and you know, this summer. And, you know, the debate over whether or not the Flames will take him, won't take him, should take him, shouldn't take him, to me, it's pretty simple. If you got a chance to take a Hall of Famer's son, like, you take it. He's ranked right now by some of the experts as high as fifth. But others have him like 11th, 12th. There's a very good chance that he could last until ninth, but there's also a very good, also a coin flips chance that, say, Montreal, who's probably going to take a forward, will take him. Would the Flames consider trading up to get Montreal's pick to get Tyja Ginla? I think that's a possibility. Everybody knows that the Calgary Flames are probably pretty interested in drafting Tyja Ginla, and they may try to hold the Flames hostage in that regard. Anyway, there's so many reasons why this is a really sexy storyline. You know, I think the fan base here, they've never seen, you know, most of them never seen any of the players outside of Celebrini. Most of the players in the top 10 ever play a single shift.
Yeah.
But you just have to look at the name on the back to understand how excited that the fan base would be. Does it put a lot of pressure on the young man? Absolutely. But guess what? If you don't take him and you pick someone else, it puts even more pressure on that player. So there are arguments every which way over this. Craig Conroy knows is a huge storyline. Craig Conroy grew up, him and Jerome were best buddies. Tease grew up playing in his, you know, backyard with Craig Conroy at Christmas and such. So he knows him quite well. It's fascinating. Do I think he'll be available at nine? I'm not sure. He was just spectacular at the U18s, and that kind of just pushed him into the top five. He got the gold medal winning goal. He had six goals, six assists in seven games, 47 goals this year with Kelowna. He exploded onto the scene to the point where I don't think the Flames could ignore him because I think they'd regret it for years and years.
And with that, like, is it as simple as just that with Conroy, with Ginla literally being with the organization, that if he's available, you know, they will pick him? Because I know I read your article and it is a bit of like, is he the best player available at nine? Maybe not. Maybe he is, but maybe not. And what do you think they should do? Let's say a guy slips from in the top five, go to nine, but Ginla's there as well. What would you do if you were Craig Conroy?
Well, if I was him, I would. Here's the thing. The easiest thing for the Calgary Flames is if Tyja Ginla is drafted fifth or seventh, and then the Flames have nothing that they can do about it. Then they just look at their list and say, who's up next? That's who we're picking at nine. That's the easiest thing because there's no controversy. I mean, there may be a controversy. People may say, well, you should have traded up for him if you had the chance. Yeah. It's hard to trade, to try and move up in the draft order in the top 10. And those picks just don't move anymore. So, but do I think that they should draft him? If Tyja Ginla is 12th on their list and he's available at nine, I still say draft Tyja Ginla. That's just me, though. I don't have any pressure on me. I just know how many jerseys that's going to sell. I just know how much excitement that's going to create. I just know how it's a match made in heaven, if you ask me. Look at Josh Doan in Arizona. When he made his debut, that was one of the most wonderful stories of the National Hockey League season. And he wasn't as highly touted at all as TJ Ginla is. So I think it's an absolute no-brainer. And if they have him at 12th on their list and they pick 9th, no one needs to know where you had him on your list. You just say, Jerome, would you mind going to the podium next and taking this jersey with you? By the way, it has your son's last name on it. Go ahead and make that selection for our 9th pick overall as your son, TJ Ginla. What amazing moment that would be, have a father draft his son. Oh, my God. Maybe it's just the columnist in me. I love the angle. It's beautiful.
My question to you, Eric, is do they unretire his number so Tej gets to play with number?
No.
No?
No, it's a good one, and I'm sure people here have already had that discussion, but he's not I don't believe he's wearing 12 right now. I think he's wearing 20. I may be wrong. I think he's wearing 24 because when I was watching either the U18s or him in Kelowna, it struck me because 24 was the first number Jerome wore for like only a handful of games, but that's the number he wore first. So I have no idea if that's why Tej is wearing that or if he's wearing it because he's twice as good as his dad's number 12 was. I don't know. We can play around with that all we want.
Awesome. Well, that I cover the Sens, and I hope, you know, a lot of me wants to get Ginla just because he's been amazing at the U18s as well for that, and he's been awesome. But it would be a match made in heaven, as you said, and what a storyline! I think you'd have maybe 50 columns this year about TJ Ginla if they got drafted him. So I hope for your sake, Eric, that they draft him.
Even if they don't draft, so if they have the chance to draft him and they don't, the first question that Craig Conroy is going to be asked on the draft floor was not, hey, why did you like this defenseman? Why did you like this player? What did you see in him? What's the future look like? It will be, why didn't you draft TJ Ginla? Mm-hmm. And that question will dog that player for the rest of his career. It'll dog Craig Conroy for the rest of his career. And hey, maybe they get it right. Maybe the kid they pick at 9 ends up being way better than TJ Ginla ever will be. But the initial backlash is going to be significant. Now, that said, you don't draft worrying about backlash. You draft based on what you think is best for the organization. You also don't necessarily draft just because the owner, guess what? I'm pretty sure the Flames owner would really like them to draft TJ Ginla. Haven't spoken to him about it. Yeah. I don't know. But are you kidding me? That's a marketing dream.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of pressure to draft him. It would take a lot of stones to not draft him. But again, maybe a moot point if Montreal takes him and ends the controversy.
How much, just, you know, you talked about Jerome being part of this organization. How much will he be part of the draft process? Maybe not even just with at the number 9 pick or if they move up as well, but what's his role with this organization right now and maybe moving forward?
Well, it's a great question. So I think he'll be assistant general manager, if not this year, then soon. He's been coaching his sons for a while in Kelowna. That's over now. And he's kind of said, now, you know, I can focus more on the Flames. The Flames have gone out of their way to say, listen, Jerome has not read the reports on his son. And I think they want to make sure they distance Jerome from the process. I don't think Jerome needs to worry about it, but I think the organization's worried that it might look like, oh, the father's really pushing for him to be drafted. Look, this kid doesn't need that. He can do this on his own merit. I think the Flames want that to be very clear. But Jerome has been coaching these kids in this age category for all these years. He's been coaching his son in Boston, and then when they moved to Kelowna, he's been running Rink Kelowna prep school. So he's an invaluable resource. He knows all these kids really, really well, including this Gavin McKenna, who's going to go first overall, not this year, but next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, Jerome knows all these kids. He knows their families. He knows their stories. He's watched them since they were 10, 11, 12, 13. So I think that an extra voice in that room who knows these kids, you know, in a different way than all the scouts would, is really a valuable tool. And they definitely plan on tapping into that.
Is that something where he, from what you know, is more drawn to the managerial side of things or coaching as well? Like here in Ottawa, obviously Alfredson became the assistant coach. That might be, you know, something that, does he stay on as a coach? Does he go into upper management? What do you think happens with Ginla? Does he want to coach at all, or is it more the management type side?
I don't know. It's a great question because he's coached for so many years, and every time I talk to him about it, he says he loves coaching the kids. Now, coaching kids and coaching NHLers is radically different. I'd be pretty surprised if he wanted to go through the grind of 82 games, flying in and around all over the world. Listen, he's going to be an empty nester soon, so I think he'd be welcome. He'd welcome the opportunity to go and reimmerse himself in the National Hockey League, but I don't think he wants to do it as a coach. Maybe down the road he gets the itch and says, I want to try 1 year behind the bench as an assistant, and then maybe, who knows? Mm-hmm. Listen, when Marty St. Louis got hired in Montreal, I thought of Jerome right away, and I thought, Marty St. Louis had what, like a season or two of like bantam hockey under his belt as a coach? And the fact that he's been, I don't want to say successful because the team hasn't been, but I think, you know, they signed him to a longer term deal for a reason. Listen, today's coaches, it's really all about managing personalities. Leave the assistants to do the X's and O's and the strategy. And there's so many people who do the analytics and all that. Just go in and be a leader, be a motivator, be a boss. I think he could do it. And I don't think you need a whole lot of training to do it. But I think he's better served, and I think he'll start in management. I'd be surprised if he left management to coach, but you never know. We've seen so many times where the organization's looking at a team and going, look, we think we could be better. It's probably time for a coaching change. Hey, you, Jerome, are you at all interested in going back behind the bench? And you never know, right? I could see that happening for sure.
How much, you know, that's been a discussion here in Ottawa just about how maybe does becoming a coach, would that impact his legacy at all? If, let's say, he's a terrible coach, I'm not saying he will be, but just, do you think that has any impact on his legacy or anything that he'd think about in terms of becoming a coach or just maybe changing his legacy in Calgary? Or
I don't think he's worried about that. I don't think he'd even think about that. Could it change his legacy? Sure, a little bit. If it didn't work out, but listen, he's probably the most beloved. I mean, Lanny McDonald is in a league of his own in this city, as an icon, as a community leader, as a hero. Like, but in terms of, you know, on ice, Joe McGinnis is the greatest flame of all time, and I'm not sure a whole lot can taint that. The way he carries himself, the way he's revered here, it's second, you know, only to Lanny probably. Does he like that spotlight? No, I don't think he does. I know he doesn't like that spotlight. I think he was happy to move to Boston and be anonymous for a handful of years. So does he want to reimmerse himself in that fishbowl? Well, that's part of what comes with being a manager. But then again, maybe that's why he wants to remain just an advisor to the organization. He can still live in Kelowna, fly into Calgary regularly. Who knows? It's everything surrounding Jerome McGinley this summer, whether it's his son, whether it's his employment, is fascinating. And people in this, it's got a lot of people really excited, no matter how it all plays out, father, son, both. It's a big topic in this city.
How much do you think this fan base, maybe, obviously, I think everyone would say that they would be ecstatic to draft Teach, but how much do you think this fan base is smart enough to be excited for a rebuild or a retool after years of being kind of in that mushy middle in your mind?
You know what? It's pretty rare when you think a fan base is like, yeah, no, we're okay with losing for a while. But I think you've got this perfect storm in Calgary right now where I think they should take advantage of the fact that people just are so happy that the same old mushy middle storyline is being dealt with. They've ripped the Band-Aid off that and they're going in a different direction. That's why I'm okay with them leaning more towards a rebuild than a retool. But either way, you've got a new building coming here in probably 4 years. That's what everybody's looking at. Look, let's have a good team going into that new building. And so I think it's not a free pass. And I think ownership will always be worried that during a retool, rebuild, it's going to be harder to sell tickets. And I think they're right. But man, oh man, you've got this golden opportunity where people have been clamoring for a retool rebuild for years. You've got this window where people want you to get ready for the new building, take advantage of it. And so to answer your question, I think people are okay with them losing. Now that said, it's all about the ticket buyer, right? The ticket buyers, it's okay for the guy who sits at home and tweets angrily every day and never goes to a game. Who cares what he thinks or does? It's the season ticket holders. It's the people who go in. If they start not showing up en masse, then they've got, you know, then there's concern. But at the end of the day, I don't think they should worry about that. I think they should do the right thing and dig deep into this massive retool.
How much do you think that a new arena might change how players in, want to stay in Calgary potentially with that? Do you think that has any effect at all?
I don't know if there's a player in the world who's going to sign with the city just because of an arena. Because listen, a brand new spanking arena or an arena that's got all the bells and whistles is kind of the norm around the league. Yes, big picture, I think some players don't want to stay here long term because they see this bush league that they have to play in, the second oldest rink in the NHL. But once you get the new one, I don't see anybody ever signing saying, I just want to play in that new rink. There's so many great rinks around the league, you know, that now, does it help? Sure, it helps. It of all the boxes that they couldn't check, you know, like when you look at the reason why so many guys leave Calgary and have left Calgary for a lot of years, the weather, playing in the West is hard, way harder than the East.
Yeah.
Not just because the hockey is bigger and tougher and stronger, but because the travel is hellish. You know, the weather, the taxes, you know, compared to a lot of places in the States. There's a lot of reasons. This is a great city. I chose this city 30 years ago. It's one of the best cities in the world. I stand proud behind it. And every player here will tell you it's a great experience when they're here. But given all the options, the grass is greener in a lot of other cities and a lot warmer too. So if you don't have a building, it's just another thing against you. But when you have the building, it's just like, yeah, that's not an issue anymore. So it won't attract people, but it may stop the bleeding.
Heading into next season, just what do you think the expectations should be for the team? And obviously a lot of it is TBD with the offseason looming large in a couple of weeks, but just, is it to be sniff the playoffs? Is it just to be like a young, fun team that plays good hockey? Like, what should the expectations be for this team next season?
I think the expectation would be that this would be one of the hardest working teams in the league. I think that was a reputation that they kind of earned this year, even though they were out of it. And certainly later in the season, they were undermanned because all their best players, some of their best players were being traded away. They still showed up every night. And that's a real credit to the leadership group with Michael Backlund and Coleman and some of these guys, but also to the coach. Ryan Huskins did a hell of a job this year motivating these guys, keeping their heads in the game and demanding a certain level of work ethic. So I think the expectation is they're one of the hardest working teams in the league. And I think a lot of people hope and think that they may be able to sniff around the edges of the playoff race as they've done for like 30 years. But I think people are hoping that they don't make the playoffs, quite frankly, get another good draft pick and go on from there. So, you know, do many people think that they can make the playoffs next year? No. Should many people think that? No. Should the organization want that? They're going to say that they want to make the playoffs. Of course, every team starts a season, even San Jose's of the world, say that's our goal this year. It should be your goal, but it's not really that achievable.
How far do you think this team is from being a, you know, maybe not a Stanley Cup favorite, but a contending team? Is it 2-3 years from now? You think 2-3 years from now?
2 or 3 years, they're not going to be a Stanley Cup contender, but 2 or 3 years, they'll be a team where you'll go into the season saying, oh, yeah, they should make the playoffs. And, oh, yeah, maybe they can do some damage. Listen, a lot can change in 2-3 years. I don't think that they have the draft picks or the young prospects right now that make me think that they could be a formidable opponent in the National Hockey League anytime soon. No chance. But, you know, by the time that new building rolls around, they keep targeting 2027 for that, 2027-2028 season. Then I think that they certainly should be on the upswing. If they're not, then it's been mismanaged.
Thanks so much for doing this, Eric. I just have one question because I think I feel like people in Calgary, this has been a tough series to watch. If you're a Flames fan, who do you cheer for when the Oilers and Canucks play? How do you watch that series as a Flames fan with all the rivalry between both teams for the Flames?
Well, to be honest, so you can't see, but I got a Whalers jersey behind me. It's the only team I ever cheered for, the Hartford Whalers.
Yeah.
Then I got in the business, and I I'm not sure today's journalists are the same way. I still think they cheer for teams. The unfortunate part of being in this great business is that you don't, you're not a fan that much anymore. And I do love the game, but I don't cheer for anyone. I really don't care. As a columnist, I just want a great story every night and hopefully early, way before deadline. And I love comebacks. I love underdogs. So that's who I cheer for all the time. But you do watch that series and you're like, well, who, you know, there's so much hatred, or there's such a rivalry between Southern Alberta and Northern Alberta that it's hard for a lot of people here to want anything good to ever happen to the Edmonton Oilers. So I think a lot of people in this city, to be quite honest, I think they're hoping that they beat the hell out of each other and then get crushed by Dallas or Colorado in the next round. I don't know. And maybe there's other people in this city. There are other people in the city who just say they want a Canadian team to do well. So I don't really have an opinion. I go back and forth. Whenever a team scores, I'm kind of like, oh, great. Or, oh, I don't.
Yeah.
I'm just enjoying the hockey. I'm watching every minute of it. And I know this playoffs hasn't been quite as exciting in a lot of ways, like in terms of game seven drama as past years. But I'm not sure I've ever been as invested as I am this year. I really am enjoying the hockey and the storyline. So that's a pretty cool one. And to watch two Canadian teams go at it as a Canadian, I'm pretty happy that's happened.
Do you have a Stanley Cup prediction as we sit here today on May 12th, I think it is? So,
I hate, like I said, I like underdogs, I like upsets, and I picked Dallas to win the Stanley Cup. And it's funny, when they went down 2-0 to the Golden Knights, I went to I don't do the online gambling anymore. Just it's not a good idea. But I checked the odds, and Dallas had slipped to 12-1, and.
Wow.
I did consider very strongly reactivating my account and putting a bunch of money on it. But again, I didn't. But the point is, I was ready to double down on Dallas. I still think they're the deepest team in hockey. I think if it comes down to them and the Rangers, it's going to be a hell of a series because they're both deep and good. But I don't know. You asked for my pick. It's always been Dallas. I still think it's going to be Dallas. And I've been wrong so many times before.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's
how know. About you? Wait, you put me. What? Who are you picking?
As we sit here today, I'll go with Dallas because they're beating Colorado. I think whichever team makes it to the finals, and then I'll go with the Panthers making it back to the finals.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna give it to the Panthers. I just think they're a really deep team. They're an unbelievable team, and maybe learned a little bit from last year. I like Dallas as well, but I just maybe the higher end players and with the Panthers are maybe a Schmid better, and Bobrovsky's been so good in the playoffs too, and Ottinger's been good, but maybe not as consistent. So, but I think those are two very good teams, and it would be an amazing hockey if those two teams were in the finals. It would be unbelievable hockey. So that's, I appreciate you putting me on the spot. So I gave my best answer, Eric.
Yeah, good. Well, I'm tired of being in the hot seat. I'm glad you're in there for a couple minutes anyway.
Before I let you go, just anything you want to plug for Sportsnet, anything people should, stay tuned for on your end, any stories that people should, you want them to read?
No, Sportsnet doesn't need any plugs. They're doing quite well right now. There's a lot of eyeballs on the playoffs, which is great. I'm covering the Dallas-Colorado series right now from home, and then in the West final, I'll be flying between the two cities. And I'll just say that Vancouver is a whole lot nicer place to visit than that other place. So going back to your other question, who do I want to win? I guess maybe it'd be a whole lot better and warmer and more pleasant if Vancouver was in my near future, but who, we'll see. We'll wait and see.
Maybe it's the Francis curse right there. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe you, helped McDavid and Draisaitl score a couple more goals.
Yeah, I'm their inspiration. Yeah,
without getting cross-checked in the face. So we'll see. maybe your take will get cross-checked in the face. We'll find out in a couple of weeks. Yeah. So awesome. Thanks.
I take it in the teeth every day, buddy. Don't worry. It's okay.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Eric. I really appreciate you doing this, and to another time. Awesome.
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, let's do it again soon, man. Cheers.